So we're talking real estate, it's ReBrew. From Tampa's breweries to deals on the rise, we'll help you grow and maximize. It's ReBrew time, let's raise a glass to Hobbs, Holmes, and making moves that last. So sip it slow and hear what's new. Welcome to the show.
Welcome back to ReBrew. This is KJ Workman with Milestone Title. I'm here with my partner in crime, Melvin Bermude. I always
mess up. Words are hard.
God, they're so hard. It's Melvin, you say your own last name. Yeah, well, we've only known each other since we were in the womb when we shared one together.
Yeah.
Because we're twins.
Came out darker. It's fine.
We took all the dark genes. It was rude. But Melvin and I are with Milestone Title, and this is our podcast, ReBrew. Today, we have a special guest with us today. He's actually really near and dear to my heart as well, because I've known this guy since day one of being in real estate. But we are here today with Mr. Jim Gaffney, and he is with the Gaffney
Mortgage Team.
There you go.
At Union Home Mortgage.
I'm going to mess it up again. Because when I first met you, we were with someone else, but you kind of made an upgrade in your life. And so you switched.
Yeah, we got acquired. Our company got acquired like a lot of banks do. So, you know.
Right.
We went from AmeriFirst to Union Home Mortgage, but it's the same place I've been at for over 9 years.
Yeah. You have a great team. You have a solid team that you work with there. And then you're everywhere. You're always teaching realtors something. You've got a pretty big presence over at the Keller Williams in suburban Tampa, but you go to other offices as well, and you're really honed in on giving the agents the knowledge that they need to become a better agent.
Yeah, I appreciate that. We spend a lot of time trying to attract through value and education, and anybody could write a loan. You'd like to think anybody could write a loan in today's environment, but we try to educate first, and then that can attract some business for sure.
So he was one of my preferred lenders as a full-time agent when I started in 2017. And he was always, you know, hey, if you don't want this deal to fall apart, you need to use, like, if it is like, yeah. This cannot mess up. I'm not saying that, like, you know, that never happens, but it never happened for me. It never happened, not one time. He was so amazing on all of my files. I knew that I could trust him. I could just give the file to him and there was going to be no issues, which as an agent working with, you know, your customers, your lifeblood, that's important. That's so huge. So thank you for all the times you saved my butt on many files and got my clients to
the table. We won't mention any names, but this one in particular was a little bit of a hiccup. So. Like he still calls me asking for you.
There's always a hiccup, but it's the way you get through the hiccups is really where it's at.
Yeah.
You know,
he's great.
I've heard nothing but good things. I've not gotten to work with you personally, but my best friend worked for you at one point and I never heard a single negative thing. No. So, which is great. You know, she says hi, by the way.
Oh,
she,
cool.
She did just text me. I did a Destiny. Just for you. But yeah, it's exciting because, you know, this was my lane for a very long time. I've been way out of the lane, so I'm probably learning some stuff from you today. You know, but it's really exciting to be able to work with people who are on the same like wavelength as us, I think is important. You know, the way that we handle things. And like you see, we were talking about it before the podcast, just having that relationship with your companies, your title companies, your third-party vendors, whoever it may be. Where you can have those real conversations. You know, I love having the ability to pick up the phone and be like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, what is going on with this file? You know what I mean? Versus like the timid, like, oh no, I don't want to ruin this. You know, like, no, tell me what's up. Like, tell me what's going wrong. Tell me what's going right. Which I think is something people don't do.
Yeah.
They're so quick to tell you what's wrong. They'll never tell you what's right. You know what I mean? So I love it. And it's exciting. It's refreshing.
Yeah. Most successes are related to people, but most failures are also related to people. So when you surround yourself with accountable people, I joke and I say I get along really well with people who are really engaged with what they do and who are very good at what they do. I tend to flock to people, vendors, affiliates, friends that are just really on point. They're a lot easier to work with than struggle bunnies.
Struggle bunnies.
New word of the day.
I like that struggle word. Struggle bunnies. Like, they're cute, but they're struggling.
Sometimes
You cute, my girl. You're a little rough today.
What's going on?
Well, the saying is, you know, you're judged by, at some point in life, you're not judged by the things that you've done or accomplished, but you're judged by the company that you keep. So early on, I've been fortunate to surround myself with really good company, and people start to judge you by that. And having accountable people around you definitely is a win.
Yeah, you definitely work with some realtors that I would say are the best in the biz, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And they count on you to help run their businesses. I would say for sure that they would absolutely include you as part of their team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what you brought us to talk about today is, I love this. So we've got some flair out here. If you're watching on YouTube or in a clip, like, we've got some, which helps a lot, because sometimes we just get going in the conversation and we're like, what are we talking about?
Struggle bunny.
So we get struggle bunny. Well, we have some helpers. So we're going to be talking about the top 10 ways to thrive in 2025. And this is something that Jim has come up with, and he's going to walk us through these 10 things. And then there's a couple of other, before the podcast started, we had some conversations and I'm like, ooh, let's make sure to bring that up, because we're all kind of on the struggle bunny bus right now. In real estate, there's some people who are absolutely killing it. And if that's you,
congrats.
Kudos.
And we know you're hustling.
And we see you and we are proud of you and congratulate you on all of that. But there are so many out there that they don't know what to do. What has worked in the past isn't working now. They need more business. They need the current business to get off the fence, right? So if you're on the buy side, or if you're thinking about selling and you just don't really know how to have these tough conversations, knowing the ins and outs of things like what Jim's going to talk about could help you steer those conversations so that you are in the right place at the right time.
Yeah. It's funny, there's a flight to quality taking place right now, where like the market's so, I'm gonna use the word damaged, but there's just so much turbulence in the market, and buyers can smell inexperience and smell the lack of confidence and leadership around getting somebody into a home or getting a home listed and priced the right way. So I've seen all of it. So I put together a list of what I would consider things to thrive in 25, meaning people wanna hire a professional, and like all the little things matter. The knowledge matters. People are buying our knowledge. They're not buying our ability to put a sign in the front yard. They're not buying our ability to put a home on MLS and pay the MLS fee. And I think sometimes real estate agents can get confused thinking that like, oh, I'm going to list the property, I'm just going to put on MLS, do some showings, host an open house. But do you really know like the granular pieces of what separates you from the person who's doing 1,000 units last year? And there are people in our market doing 1,000 units in production. So what are they doing different? They provide a pretty high level of knowledge and expertise, and people can kind of, people, I say they could smell it. You know, you could smell it through the phone.
Yeah.
You can hear that confidence, that education in their voice, where they just know what they're doing.
Right. And the more little pieces you learn about this business, I mean, when you start day one, there's so much coming into your head that it is hard to feel knowledgeable about everything, and you're not. And you're rightfully not. So that's when you take the time to come to trainings and classes. I know Milestone and Melvin and I, we help you guys a lot with branding and marketing, especially on social media. But there's also classes that are like content related, not content social media, but like real estate content, things that you need to know. And Jim is really good. Remember, I used to go to Jeopardy.
Yeah,
do you still real do estate Jeopardy?
Jeopardy. I do still do real estate Jeopardy. Yes,
it was fun.
It was I still
so
have the fun. Buzzers actually too.
Yeah, you could work as a team, I think.
Bring it back.
Well, you think we should do one? It was a lot of fun, but you learned a lot too, and you're like, because a lot of times you have a myth or something in your head or something you were taught wrong, and so then you go to this, you know, fun little thing that you're putting on, and you think you know the answer to something, and you're like, wow. I didn't know that I was wrong about that for the last
Or you were taught right and you just need to see a different perspective. You
or
know,
that.
I think we get a lot of it. We just, you know, at our last agent lab thing that we did, it was a conversation I had because, you know, we had different people up there speaking on social media, you know, and typically with anything, not just social media, you always see people have different perspectives on the same way to execute something, right? So I've always made it a point to be like, listen, I may have a different view on how you should do this than you, than her, than the other guy that does social media for a living, you know, than the other guy that's doing this or whatever. Take the bits and pieces of what everybody else is doing and then formulate your own opinion and try it.
You
know, what is it that, you know, 90% of the people in the room won't do anything with what you teach them?
Yeah.
Oh, right.
You know, it's like 10% of the people that will try it.
And then one. And
usually those 10% of the people, the one that are like, they're doing better. You know what I mean? But like, you probably had it. You get the same regulars that show up all the time, but you never see them execute anything that they've learned.
Yeah.
And then they're wondering why they're spinning their tires. It's like, well, you've shown up to 5 different trainings and you've done nothing from all 5.
Yeah. Clear. Just engaging in the activity, doing the work, right? It's the old fashioned good thing. Old Irish proverb I made up when I was younger. I made up. Good things happen to people who work. That's it.
Write that down. If you're on the struggle money bus, write it down. Good things happen.
You got to put the time in. You got to put the time
you
in.
Do. So, you do.
So top 10 ways to thrive. Taxes and exemptions, just to jump right in. If I'm a buyer's agent, and I'm showing a property, 1,000%, I am looking at the tax bill before I leave my house to go to that home with a buyer. I'm not going to be caught in the kitchen talking about the home, talking about the offer, and not knowing if there's an existing exemption on the property, if there's a war veteran living in the home, if it's homestead or not homesteaded. Understand tax exemptions. Know a little bit about like our millage rate. Like, be able to just give an estimate of what someone can expect on property tax. I can't tell you how many times I spoke to a buyer. They say, "Hey, can you give me a payment example on this home?" Or the realtor's making that phone call saying, "Hey, they want a payment stamp." I say, "Great, can you tell me what the taxes are?" "Oh, I don't know."
That was me. Back if you are first starting in real estate, this may seem like something that you're like, why would I do that? Like, why don't we look at the house first? And if they like it, then I'll look at the taxes.
Yeah.
Once you start looking at the taxes, you can eliminate some of the properties that they're going to look at pretty quickly, because you'll realize the taxes are putting them way out of the payment range.
Exactly.
And if you don't know that ahead of time, or if it's in an HOA community, it has super high HOA, if it's a condo, if it's a townhome, those things get calculated into your monthly payment. And if you're going to be out of your range, there's no point in going and look at the house.
Pro tip and shameless plug. Pretend to do a net sheet with our milestone app and it will tell you what the taxes are.
There you go.
If you don't know how to go online and look it up through public records, or you're just in that much of a hurry, because I know sometimes you go to these tax assessor sites and it's like you've got to click 14 times to get to the right spot.
Oh, Hernandez.
Just pretend you're doing a net sheet. It'll fill in the tax amount and at least you'll get an idea.
But you need to be aware that there is exemptions. Because like, if your taxes on a $500,000 property are $500 a year, that's not right. We got some exemptions on there that maybe your buyer won't have. Most likely not.
Especially the veteran stuff.
Yeah. Because like, for example, my husband's 100% disabled through the VA. So we don't pay property tax. So if someone pulls our tax on an app like ours, it says $2,000 a year for taxes. Well, no, it's not. We just don't pay the $12,000 taxes that Fishhawk charges us because we're 100% disabled.
That's crazy.
So that's going to change your monthly payment drastically. $1,000.
Just being the pro, I always say, just be the pro. And are you really being the pro if you haven't done the work to pull a free? It's free, by the way.
Literally.
It's a free tax bill. And then, you know, part of the taxation is, you know, if you have a client who's selling a home and buying a home, they're eligible for this event called portability tax exemption. So, you know, the amount of times that I go to a closing and we're talking, and I've done the math and I've done the research for the realtor, but a lot of times the real estate agent just doesn't know. They don't even know that it was available.
Right.
And here's what could be a massive tax exemption going into their next year of taxation. And it hasn't even been brought up. So that should be brought up early on. To use as a tool, as a tool for affordability, to say, hey, there's some light at the end of the tunnel. I know this payment's a little aggressive right now, but hey, next year when you file your homestead exemption and you file your portability exemption, you should see a pretty significant decrease in those property taxes. It might get somebody off the fence to buy the home.
And I'm going to try to explain this in kind of layman terms, because portability, I would say about 85% of the agents that I know don't know what that is. Now, they may have heard the word, but they don't really know what it means. So in layman's terms, I mean, basically, if you bought a home in Florida and then you sold it and you're moving into another home, you can portable taxes, portability,
transfer. What is the word? They carry over. It can carry over.
There you go. So it'll carry over into what your new house is. So like, you're paying the payments, the taxes based off of the old house, kind of.
You're getting a credit from the exemption that you had in your departing residence. You're going to carry that exemption over and add it to the homestead exemption on your new residence. So you're increasing the amount of tax exemption value, which is going to decrease your property taxes. Believe it or not, you can actually call the property appraiser's office. For example, we're in Hillsborough County right now. You can call the Hillsborough County property appraiser's office and ask the individual on the phone, here's the address. Can you help me calculate the carryover tax exemption? You can physically tell your clients an exact number. You're going to get $131,000 and 19 cents, you know, exemption going to the new home. That's going to separate you from the other real estate agents who's not doing that.
That sounds again, so good.
People buy your knowledge. And when you can buy knowledge like that, when you're starting to negotiate commissions and buyer paid compensation agreements, you're really starting to earn that value for something as little as looking up free information.
So if this is something that you're like, I want to learn more about this, we are putting together a class at Milestone. I don't know if you have one on portability specifically.
Yeah, I do.
So if you have one, so later in the show notes and then at the end of the show, we're going to say how you can get a hold of Jim. And if you're looking to work with him or come to one of his classes to learn more about this kind of stuff, then you can go and email him, call him, go to his Facebook page. But if you're looking to learn more about portability, because it could help you as a listing agent sound more knowledgeable. Well, you will be more knowledgeable. You won't just sound like it. You will be more knowledgeable and you probably will get more deals closed, I think, if the more you know, right? The more you know.
The more you know, or know before you go.
Or know before you go. There's another book that Jim had. Jim has two books here. Who knew? I didn't know. Okay.
So we've been busy. So next thing for thriving in 2025, if you're a listing agent selling a condominium, really, really brief on this one. We don't do a ton of condos on my side, on the water side, on the Gulf side there is, but just be prepared. Know if your home is conveyable. Don't list the home before you have physically spoke to the management company and just make sure that the condo is up to standards. There's engineers reports that are needed. There's a condo approval packet that's needed. There's questions around occupancy and percent of defaults and investor concentration, all this stuff. So to pass that on to the buyer who now just made a deposit, who's getting a home inspection, who just paid for an appraisal, and then their lender has to go and like search for all this stuff.
Oh gosh, and they don't respond.
They don't respond quickly. So if you're a listing agent, you're selling a condominium, please stop what you're doing before you put a sign in the yard. Call the management company, find out if it's a lendable property, a Fannie Mae warrantable property. Has there been any issues with it obtaining financing? The person answering the phone will likely know that answer. Okay. Because if they're not lendable, they've heard it before.
Right.
Yeah, so they're going to share with you, or they're going to say, oh, we're good. We just closed a loan a week ago. You know, so that's all. Listing a condo, do the legwork before, keywords before you bring a buyer all through that path, set expectations with your seller, start planning moving, hiring moving trucks, issue, you know, making deposits, start working on the condo approval piece.
So I don't think people realize how much there is to the condo side, like especially when it comes to the mortgage side. And then they lean on, being that I was in mortgages, they lean on us like, oh, why is it taking so long? Well, because you didn't do anything.
Yeah. Right.
We're starting from scratch. We can't get a hold of the right person. That person's telling me to reach out to this person. Yeah. Then the condo association switched at one point. They don't know who handles what. And then you're waiting on certs and this and that.
And they only work from like 1:30 to 3:02.
Like 2 days a week.
Literally 2 days a week.
Yeah. Our hours are 9 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. on Mondays.
Right.
We're closed Tuesday through Friday.
Right. It's about how it is.
I'll leave
and there's money involved too. I mean, people have to pay. They're paying for the home inspection and they're paying for the home appraisal. Then they're paying $200 or $300 for the condominium packet as a fee typically to most management companies. So someone could be $1,400 into a transaction to find that the home was never even lendable in the first place. Or they're required to put down a 25% down payment. So anyway, condo's big topic, but validation phone call to a listing agent prior to walkthrough. Here's just a fun little tip that I wanted to share, because it's not uncommon for buyers to come to closing and say, we just left the walkthrough and there was boxes everywhere, or the house was a mess, or the seller's still there, the truck's in the driveway, and
the litter box is filled.
The litter box is filled up.
Oh, stuff in the garage we thought we would leave for you.
Yeah, oh, we left you the ping pong table and the firewood in the garage. So
you're like, I didn't ask for that.
So my suggestion, if you're a buyer's agent, mind you, if you're a listing agent, the cleanliness of that home at the walkthrough is a direct reflection of your brand and your reputation and how you're able to control your seller. But for the buyer's agent, it's also a direct reflection of you and your buyer experience when they come to a closing and they have that type of experience. When they're ready to go hand us a $100,000 check an hour later after the walkthrough, it can feel a little bit unsettling knowing that they just had that experience of like a dirty home.
Oh, it's
so
it's
make the hard. Make a phone call to the listing agent. Hey, we're going to be there tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock to do a walkthrough. Is everything ready? Is the house ready? Is it clean? Maybe the contract doesn't say it has to be clean, but ask the question, is it clean?
Right.
Or if it's not too far, drive past the thing, make sure the grass is mowed. That's the thing that I ran into a few times, open houses, brokers opens. Yeah. You know, you show up, you've got 20, 30 people coming through that day and the grass is knee high. It's like,
Is the home presentable? It's the
everybody understands like grass can be cut, but it's just, that's your reputation. They're going to come in and immediately judge you based off of what they see initially, right?
I'm going to find 100%. Any reason to ask for something that's not full price.
I paid the neighbor to mow the grass one time.
It's the last first impression that your client's going
to
get.
Last first impression. I like it. When it comes to the closing day, so he was saying on the buy side, you're a buyer agent, you're about to go do your walkthrough, call the listing agent and say, is it clean? Now, listing agents sometimes are not really on the best of terms with their sellers when it comes to closing day for whatever reason, and they can go, I don't freaking know. Like, it says in the contract what? Normal wear and tear, I think.
Or yeah, there's some generic language, but
yeah, there's no requirement.
If it means spending $150 to pay a landscaper, Melvin, right, or maybe even a cleaning company to just make that investment, just create a beautiful path. Even if the home's not beautiful, it can be beautiful for your buyers. But it could also be disheartening when it's just a pile of garbage everywhere.
I mean, think about it. Like, if you're moving into a home, like, well, whenever I move into a home, I always have it professionally cleaned before I even put my first box in, right? That's just me. But like, if I walked into a house that I was just finished buying, you know, or I'm about to go buy, and it smells bad.
Oh my God, I was gonna say, get a couple Blade plugins. I mean, they're cheap. The hell?
Oh my gosh. So as the listing agent, you can either pay for the house to be professionally cleaned as part of your service. Like, hey, on the final day of walkthrough, I'm going to have my company come through, not yours, but the one that you prefer. And you go through, unless you have one, that's a great idea. Then you can have it cleaned professionally. Now, I was going to tell the story. I had this happen. One of our realtors that we work with, she paid $500 to have this house cleaned. The buyers moved in and the house was still atrocious. So like, she was opening the freezer and the fridge and there's just bugs and like mildew.
Oh,
there was just the baseboards had like, you know, an inch of fur on it, which, you know,
fur.
Yeah, fur, like clean the baseboards. But there's little things like that. So when you're at that point, you have to make a decision either on the list side or the buy side. Like, what's my reputation worth? What is my referral worth? Because if neither of these people are happy, because I didn't pay the extra $300 to have someone come either come back out and clean it or clean it in the first place, that's your entire business that you're just letting walk away.
Which, in the scope of how much you make on a commission, like, hello.
I mean, hopefully.
I would just have this conversation with an agent, and it's, you know, the ones that understand the whole, like, sometimes you have to spend money to make money, they're doing phenomenal. You know what I mean? Like, they're going in ahead of time. I mean, I've had agents I just spoke with recently that, like, listen, before the open houses, we go in and we clean the house ourselves. You know, because the seller's like, oh, it looks great. Yeah. But, you know, it looks great to the seller. It's like, you know, it's like when you walk into a home and you've had, like my house, I have like the little air fresheners piped through the HVAC system. I don't smell them anymore. But everybody comes in like, oh my God, your house smells amazing, right?
Yeah.
So to the person that's like in the home, it may feel normal to you. But like, have an outside person come in and be like, hey man, is it smell good in here? Is everything clean? You know what I mean? And then you as the agent, that's your reputation. Like, go in there and spend an hour before the open house, clean it, pick it up, move some things around. You know, let the client know. I've got my agents that'll let the client know, hey, I'm bringing in some extra pillows, whatever we're lacking. They have little staging things. What's the name? It's a whole garage pool.
My whole garage.
You know, like little things, like the little pick it up, move it around, make it look a little bit better. And just let them know, hey, I'm gonna move your stuff. I'll put it back when I'm done. But like, I need this to look good for whatever we're doing. And somebody just show up and hope it all works out. They don't want to spend any money to make it look good.
I'm well, like, someone told them it was that easy. And then they were.
Well, they've been watching Netflix.
All good points. So realtors, prepare. That's all.
Prepare.
It's relatively speaking, it's free. Let's call it relatively free.
Right. It's the cost of doing business, I would say.
Cost of doing business. So, all right. So closing date. Buyers, agents, and sellers, agents. Really simple. Just make sure that whoever needs to sign the day of closing knows that they need to sign the day of closing and that they're in the country.
Simple, but that doesn't
it would help if they're not vacationing in the Philippines the day of closing and they tell you the day before closing that their spouse is out of the country and they need to get a power of attorney or something. So just...
Or, hey, I'm married. Does my wife need to...
That part too.
What?
What's crazy is people are afraid to ask those questions. And I think that's so ignorant, for lack of a better word. They're afraid to ask those things. Like, hey, are you married? Like, it's not like, I don't want to be invading their privacy. Okay, so you're the whole deal? Because you just didn't want to ask them if that person that they've been
in. Some don't know they're married, are they dead honest? Don't know they're married. Oh, no, we took care of that a long time ago. Well, did you ever get a divorce? No, she just moved to Miami. Okay.
Okay, so that's your wife. So great. We need signatures.
Yeah.
So
I'm closing in 3 hours because now we got to start
a lot of it too, though, Jim. And you could probably test this. It's active freaking listening. Yeah. It's just you listen, and if you're on a phone call and they're mentioning, oh yeah, you know, we're going to be going on vacation soon. Oh,
wait, when?
Yeah.
When and where are you going on vacation? You know what I mean? But like active listening, you know, and it happens a lot of times.
Yeah.
Something as simple as loan applications. You know, people are so used to like, fill out my loan app online, and they get it and it's gold. They never verify the spelling, they never verify the driver's license, never verify it. And then it comes to title and they're like, I can't say how many times on the title side, they're like, oh, I can't believe you guys didn't catch that. Well, it came over from the lender that way. Like, what do you mean?
A lot of lenders missed the non-borrowing spouse has to sign. Some people get offended. I don't want my wife to sign for one reason or another. Maybe it's whatever, but in four, it's a homestead state. The spouse has to, the signature docs at closing. So anyway, short story, get engaged with your buyers. Know that they're going to be here for closing. And just real quick, look at the calendar before you put the close date on the contract. Make sure it's not on like the 4th of July or Labor Day Sunday. So, I mean, it's just not uncommon. We get closing dates and the title company says, oh, well, you know, that's a Saturday. So we'll need to move that up a little bit because lenders do prepare their closing packages, their documents, their disclosure sets. Everything is based on that closing date.
Right.
So let's just make sure it's an actual like business day.
Mm-hmm.
If mistakes like that are made, it's changeable. That's why we have addendums. But like as part of your process, kind of like
just double check. You shouldn't need to do if you're just doing due diligence. Like you shouldn't need to do an addendum if you did it all right.
Right.
Initially, you know,
perfect things change,
great, but you know,
perfect world. Yeah. I mean, there's times where I think I'm booking a closing in July. This is back when I was an agent, but I'm looking at the June calendar,
on yesterday's Wednesday. So
So then I'm like, July 15th, and I'm actually looking at June 15th, and that's in July, it's a Saturday. Okay, well, I messed up. You make the changes, but one of the little things just to keep your life more simple is look at your calendar. Melvin's going to laugh at me. Look at your calendar.
She's doing good with this calendar thing. Let me tell you, I am proud.
Yeah, he's so proud.
I just got a calendar that it's the whole year in front of me. So rather than just month to month, this takes up the entire
big ass calendar. Yeah, I love big ass calendar.
And you just look at it one time, you say, okay, well, I'm, you know, October, I have this thing, so I can't plan on that day rather than having to flip through an individual calendar.
It stressed me out at first because my post-it notes wouldn't stay on it. They kept blowing off.
Yeah, so I just write a marker.
Oh, yeah, no. This is what I started doing. I got a little thin tip marker and I'm like, all right, we're just going
to. But it's nice to see your year in full in front of you. Actually, it has been a little bit of a game changer, I can say. So.
I actually just met him a couple months ago. He was speaking at our mortgage event.
Was this $55 calendar? So
I know.
Yeah, or I could just use a chalkboard next time.
I can see him again next month, I think. He's
cost 2 cents, exactly. But Melvin, you talked about addendums just now. And on the topic of addendums, you know, just what you write on that addendum is going to be critiqued by the lender, right? So just be careful the words that you use. So any items you talk about, repair items, when you have the word repair in an addendum, and I'm not saying not don't be compliant, don't say that things need to be fixed, but once you do that, you're now telling the bank that this item is going to be repaired by a contractor who has a work order and an invoice, a paid invoice, and a potential for the appraiser to go back out to the property to do a reinspection, that repair item has been remedied, and that's gonna, there's a cost for a revisit. So just watch your language on the addendums, and don't use vague language. Don't say buyer offered seller to, I don't know, you know, pay for this or something like that. It has to say buyer and seller agree to blank. It can't say seller's offering buyer this. Well, that it can be a little bit ambiguous whether the buyer has accepted that offer of the seller for said item. Seller credit is the most common. So just when you're writing addendum language, be very specific. Don't leave it vague.
I thought they said the word should in it once.
Should, yeah.
It should say should?
No, it said like seller should.
Oh.
I'm like, that doesn't guarantee anything.
Yeah.
Because I should do a lot of things. I don't do. Why are you putting words like should or might? Like, what are you doing?
They might. They might pay for that. Yeah. Well, I know.
Buyer might be willing.
There's rules around like the kind of advice we can give in title and in lending, right? So if you're like, well, I need to put this in the special comments, or we ask your broker for sure. However, like if you ask us, we literally legally cannot say these are the words that you should use. So just be careful when you're doing that. Definitely
talk to
your broker.
Word should. I'm like, you should reach out to
your
broker.
You should.
Might be able to do something, but reach out to
I would say legally I'm not allowed to comment, but if I were you, I would. And then I would say, like, if I were in that person's shoes, but I don't ever get, because we're not allowed to. So if you ever do ask that kind of question to your lender, to your title company.
I have credit advice, and I can only go so far with that, too.
I can't tell you what to say in the addendum, but I can say that saying that your buyer would like to sell it to remove the car that's on the front yard on Jack's in the contract, that maybe that should be changed.
Maybe we need to talk about that outside the actual contract.
Because
people will throw everything on the original contract and you're like, well, some of that stuff needs to go over there. Like, this is just the purchase of the home, the terms that we're agreeing to, the deadlines, the deposits, the amounts. That's their contract. The rest of the stuff, talk to your broker
and
about.
Talk to your title company.
You led right into number
talk
five.
To your title company. Your title company.
You're smooth.
Your title company can be one of the first filters of of incorrect information on a contract. They could be the first to kind of poke the realtor and say, hey, this language may be ambiguous. Did you want to adjust that?
Did you want to? Should you?
Should you want to?
Yeah, right.
Should you change that?
I feel like you should.
Or, and the title company is going to be, they're the first line of defense. So when someone does a contract and their loan is in the name of Joe Smith and the contract says it's the Smith Family Trust, the title company should be like proactive and get a copy of the trust and things like that. Make sure that the person who's selling the home is the person who's legally able to sell the home.
Oh my gosh, yes.
We've had people come in to sign on the seller's behalf, and it's like, oh, that's in my grandma's estate or something.
Oh, and she's on her deathbed, and she can't sign. Well, shoot.
Yeah.
That or it's one of those situations where, like, it's parceled out, or, like, I mean, I had one personally where it was, like, the piece of land, but, like, the well was in between both of the properties that were still one property, but then, like, one was owned by this half, and the other one was under a different name, like, ask the right questions, and it goes back to like looking up some of the stuff in public records and taxes and, if it looks weird, like, okay, wait, that's the same address. Why is there two tax bills? Like what is happening here? I mean, it's a weird stuff like that, but it happens.
Yeah, it's actually very more common than you would think that homes are in estates, trusts, revocable trusts, irrevocable trusts. A lot of people don't know the differences. But working with the title company that's like a partner, someone who can communicate with, someone that you can trust, someone who that you can tell to and say, hey, here's the standards that I have and how I communicate with my clients. I would love for you to share that with me. Just have like open conversations to say, hey, I want my clients getting a status update. I want them getting a phone call prior to closing. Imagine that. They get an actual phone call and not an email from a title representative saying, hey, we're excited about your closing on Thursday. We just want to make sure that you're coming with your driver's license and your wife would be and her driver's license.
And that certified copy that you said you were going to give to me on the day of closing so I can record it. Whatever, it's the POA or the
right. Divorce. Just increase the communication with your title partners. And they're really a partner. And you want someone who's ordering things. A lot of title companies will hold off on order. And I get it. There's a cost involved with surveys and certain things. But, just communicate. Are you ordering? Can you order the estoppel early? Can you order the survey early? Like, we're very confident in this lender's approval. The payoff, we're requesting a payoff timing. Do we know who the lien holder is? On the lien searches, like, where are we in our lien searches? Do we have payoffs for any additional liens? So just increase the communication with your title partner. I'll say the same thing for insurance. Just communicate with your insurance partners, but title is such a critical play, such a critical role from contract to deposit to closing preparations and so on. So just increase your communication with your title company. Talk to them about your expectations with your clients. So everybody has a better experience and you're not getting business as usual because you're one of 100 files that title company has. Remember, title companies, just like lenders, we are not motor vehicle. We have to earn your business as a real estate agent. We have to we want to deserve your business.
Right.
We're back with the title section. Of course, the camera overheated during the title piece.
It's too hot.
It's like, we're too hot for this industry. Watch out now. But in case you missed it, yeah, I mean, we just, you know, the ending point was basically, you know, the title companies are partners. Lean on your title company. If you don't know what's going on with the property, you have a weird feeling or you had a conversation, let us know in advance. You know, we do this thing where we like to pre-open files, you know, so if it becomes something where you think something's going to be wrong, you know, all we need is like a listing agreement. Once we have a listing agreement, that's kind of like a green light for us to say, okay, this one might be a little complicated. Let's get ahead of it.
We have to have the file so that we can go ahead and we'll start your title search without you going under contract. Because let's say you get that cash offer and they're like, well, how fast can you close? Well, right. The answer is, how fast can title close? Yeah. So if we are, it depends on the home, right? If you're in an HOA community or if you've got crazy liens or things that are going to prevent the closing, it take longer. But if it's a clean, streamlined thing, then we can get it closed 8, 9, 10 days on a cash deal that doesn't have a lender involved. And if we've already got that title search up and running. So when you are working with the title company, when you work with Milestone, you know, send over your listing agreement, go ahead and file, get the file open. But one of the things we like to do is an onboarding process with our agents. And if you're not working with the title company yet, and you're like, I want to find my right partner, definitely talk with us, because we will onboard you with our processors and our closers so that you can set your expectations on communication, on how you like things done, kind of just how, especially if you're particular about the way you like things, because you've been doing it for a while and you're like, I just would like someone to kind of get on my page.
Right.
Then we'll talk about it. We'll zoom you in with all of your team members. We'll be there so that we kind of know what your expectations are as well. But that's super important. So do that. Partner with a lender or, you know, two, if that's your thing, partner with your title company and make sure that you've built a team around your expectations so your clients are always getting the same service.
Yeah, okay. Which leads us right into the lender part.
There you go.
Lender part. We're talking about successes and mistakes. So mistakes are typically made by humans. There's only so many non-human mistakes. You can have cut values, you could have lien issues, you could have insurance issues, but they're all people representing each one of those. So when you have your lender, your home insurance company, your title, your real estate agent, your buyer, and your seller, if a transaction has a hiccup, what is my word again? If the transaction has something delaying it from closing, it's typically one of those things, right? And there's a human piece behind that. So work with the right people. Guys, call the buyer's lender. Call the buyer's lender at the time of pre-approval, definitely at the time of contract. So for you receive an offer from a buyer, or buyer's realtor, call the phone number on the pre-approval letter. Just say hello. Just make sure they're human. Maybe they're local. That would be ideal. Maybe they know what they're doing. That would be even better.
That would be awesome.
Just get a temperature. Like I call it, just you could smell someone's confidence through the phone when someone's like, oh, you know, the Workman file, yes, 100% ready, fully underwritten loan. I can close in 10 to 12 days. I'm ready when you are. Like that confidence versus a phone call from a lender who says, who is it again?
Who? What phone?
Melvin who? For what? Where, how do you spell that? Yeah, they should be okay. Like, they should be okay.
Which a lot of that, you can hear it. A lot of that's the, you know, just being in lending, a lot of that and coming from the corporate world of lending too. I worked in that industry. It's a lot of times it's those big bank stuff. It's just some random little person behind the phone that's not.
Well, let me look up the file real quick. Let me check it. I'm not the one assigned to this, but let me see if I can read through the notes. And
it's somewhere
how frustrating is it when you call any company and you're like, oh, can I put you on hold for 3 to 5 minutes while they read through the notes and they come back and just like read back what someone else left?
And it's transfer like, okay, it to us.
So you have no freaking clue what's going on with this. Who is working on this?
So make a validation phone call. You don't want to get transferred, to Melvin's point, to a five-digit extension number because it's 501, God forbid they stay after 5 o'clock at the big banks. But, you know, make a validation phone call to the buyer's, I can guarantee that represents your commission check. That lender's holding your compensation, your family's money. They're holding it in their hands and you don't even know who they are. Yeah. Think about that. You're getting a $5,000, $8,000, $10,000, $12,000 commission. Someone's responsible for the bulk of that taking place and you've never met them in your life. Why would you not make a phone call to say hello? So make your validation phone calls to the lender, While we're talking about lenders and validation phone calls, that's at the time of contract, right? So on contracts, be careful with your financing contingencies. If you're a listing agent, we're seeing this more and more where people are exiting contracts, but you're doing a 30-day mm-hmm. contract. When you leave the FAR bar blank in Florida, it's an assumption of a implied 30-day honor or closing date. So there's no bank in the planet that takes 30 days right now to underwrite a loan, to approve a loan. I would say 15 days, even 15 is aggressive. Like a lot of us are like in that 10 to 12 day space. But if your buyer can't get a loan approval in 15 days, I would want to know about that. If I'm representing a seller who's moving to Chattanooga, right? Maybe Chattanooga seems to be a popular place lately. Legit. If I'm representing a client who's moving 500 miles away, they've got moving trucks, they've got family, they've got deposits. I am not doing that without knowing exactly that buyer is ready. And I don't want to find out on day 29, Carrie. So on day 29, you're telling a buyer it's completely compliant to tell me that your financing didn't go through on day 29 of a 30-day contract. For me, that's crazy. So, you know, listing agents, part of your negotiation tools to protect your name, your recognition, your brand, your client, your commission. Why not get a little bit more aggressive with the financing contingency? Put some pressure, some welcome pressure, right, on the buyer. And just make sure that those financing contingencies are not the length of your contract. It doesn't protect, it's not a lot of protection for your client.
Protect anybody.
Doesn't protect anybody.
So with that on the buyer agent side, right, you tend to want to give your buyer the most protection that it can. So you can say, all right, if you say nothing on the contract, it's 30 days for the financing contingency deadline. And if you get to that day 30, yeah, you can pull out of the contract because you didn't get approved. But who does that serve? No one.
Yeah.
But on the list agent side, you can accept an offer that maybe isn't like price point the best, or maybe they're asking for a lot of concessions. But if you talk to that lender and you can get that financing contingency down to 15 days or whatever 15 agree upon, you know that, hey, after 15 days, like your walkout period's gone. So like I feel more confident going with this offer versus, hey, this offer is giving us the moon, but they've also got a 100-day financing contingency period just in case they need to pull out at some point. So that doesn't give you a lot of confidence. But talk with the lender. One of the things that Jim used to do with when I would write offers for our clients, especially during COVID, he was excellent at this, and I'm sure you'll still do it to this day for your partners that you work with. But he would record a video of him saying, hey, I've got this, the Smith family, they're gonna be putting an offer on 123 Main Street, and I'm their lender, I've got them almost fully approved, like, you know, whatever he said to build the confidence up, and he would send it to the listing agent along with my offer, because I would be like, hey, I'm submitting the offer tomorrow, could you go ahead?
I'm not mad at that.
Yeah, and it was excellent. Those listing agents loved it, I loved it, my buyers loved it, like,
well, everybody loved it. Well, gives you the warm and fuzzy, it gives you the face behind the desk, it gives you so much. I mean, it's like I've been pushing for years, is the power in just a little video.
Yeah.
Even for listing agents, but you know, buyers agents, doesn't matter, just the power in, hey, I just want to let you know, your offer was accepted, this is exciting, I cannot wait, I don't need anything from you yet.
Right.
But when I do, I will let you know.
Right.
Yeah.
Or you could just send a text. I mean, what the hell does that do?
I still do that video. Just about every listing agent I send a video to. That. And I get more feedback around that than so many other things that we do for clients. I probably get the most recognition from listing agents. Some of them will actually reply and say, that was really cool. Nobody does that.
Nobody does.
They don't.
And I just say, I'm Jim. I just want to connect the name with the face. I'm human. Answer my phone. This is my cell phone. You know, you can call me after hours. I work on weekends. I want you to know that you can count on me to be available for you. And that's it. I'm not talking really so much about the buyer. I say, listen, they're ready. They've already gone through underwriting. But I just want you to know that, like, I'm on top of it.
Yeah.
And sometimes just hearing that, whether it's a title, insurance, and really anyone that you work with in life, when you just see an email signature or a text, like Melvin said, it's just hard to feel emotional, emotionally tied.
Yeah, you don't get the emotion.
Yeah. So lastly, let's talk about affordability for a second. So that's my favorite topic. My favorite topic. We have an inaffordability model taking place right now with our market. We have more homes on the market than we would like to have on the market. We're pushing 5 months inventory. So what do we do to get buyers off the fence? What's the solution? Because all we can talk about is like the Fed and rates and all these things that none of us can control.
Let's flesh out the common things that we hear, right? So we talk to agents every day. What are the things that we're hearing on a regular basis? Interest rates are too high.
Mm-hmm. Rates too high. I'm going to wait.
Prices are costing.
I'm going to wait.
I don't know what's going on. Or the prices are too high. Now, we did see some severe inflation for high house prices, especially in our local market after COVID. And we did see some quite a bit of elevation in prices compared to the rest of the country or even the state. But you're going to talk about how it may not even matter. Not so much about the price point. And you're going to give an example, but just the price point. But really, the pain point is the payment, not the price.
Exactly.
And like how to work around that payment so that you're getting into the house that serves you the best without feeling like you're, you know, losing your pants or whatever. So
yeah, the payment's critical. So we just talked about the analogy of when you go to buy a car. Did you ever walk out of a car deal and know what was on the bottom line of that note, of that agreement? Typically, no, right? What you do know is they came over to your desk and said, hey, we just spoke to the manager and he wrote down a number and he circled it. And he said, if I can do this payment for you, Jim, over 11 years for your new F-150, you know, will you take this truck today? I'm like,
you
heck yeah.
11-year loan?
Oh my gosh, that's a new trend on TikTok, not even gonna lie. There's dealership, they're like, tell us your payment and your term. They'd be like, oh, my payment's $400 and my term is 362 months.
You're like, how many months?
I'm sorry. That's probably exactly what they did. They're like, what's your payment?
So people buy payment. Now, owning a home, they're not flipping a home. They want to live in the home long term. Appreciation's going to do its thing. Equity building's going to do its thing. Our job is to create education through education around home ownership. So you can make an offer on a home and request a seller credit. You can utilize a seller credit to give you a discounted payment. You can use temporary discounts to give you a discounted payment. So what I am suggesting, and some of the top real estate coaches in the country use this model, which is that they're selling the payment on the home. They're not selling the price. So the buyer, the real estate agents are putting in the buyer's mind the price. Oh, the seller's at 420. We need to come in at 412. We need to counter it 418, and they're planting those seeds. The buyer doesn't know the difference between 420, 412, 408 as it relates to their monthly payment. If they knew that the difference of that $10,000 was like $55 a month, they probably wouldn't care. But they're more concerned with the payment. So we have increased taxes in our market. We have all these reassessments that are getting blown out from the COVID appreciation. We have increased homeowners insurance. So the payment is more valuable to the buyer than the sales price. So suggestion one is start to sell the payment, to have conversations with your buyer. What's the ceiling? What's your comfort zone payment if you found your dream home? $2,500, okay, great. Go filter home searches around payments that are gonna stay in that $2,500 range. Communicate with your lenders around that.
So many factors though.
So many factors, but that's why you communicate with your lender, you pull the tax bill like we talked about, you get an insurance quote for that home as an example.
You can use our app.
Use the milestone app.
You can use the milestone app.
A good lender is going to give you an honest idea of what is realistic for you. And I think I used to get a lot of those calls where it'd be like, oh, well, I thought I could buy this house. And well, they didn't factor in your homeowner's insurance.
Yeah.
They didn't factor in the taxes. They didn't factor in all these pieces. Like, so our payment's not $1,100? No, I mean, your payment, principal and interest, maybe is $1,100. Yeah. But there's all these other things that you're not taking into consideration that no one took the time to explain to you.
Well, the common...
Educate. Like, that goes back to your thing. Educate.
The common question is, how much do we approve for? How much do we pre-approve for? pre-approve for 400. Well, what does 400 mean? That means there's a payment ceiling behind that as relates to your debt-to-income ratio. So we don't want your payment to go over X, right? If, as long as you're comfortable paying that. Anyway, back into the payment, look for homes that can give you the payment that you want, not the price that you want, because you can actually pay more money for a house. I'll say it again, because I beat a dead horse a lot when it comes to affordability. I'm not passionate about a lot of things. I'm a pretty level guy. But when it comes to affordability, you can pay ask price for a home, request a fair seller credit, and getting that seller credit to use to buy down your interest rate will give you a payment as though you paid $30,000 or $40,000 less than the original ask price of the home. So you're not hearing that. You're just hearing like the list price. You're not hearing on a $400,000 home, if we could get a $10,000 seller credit, and by doing that, we're going to give you a payment as though you bought the house for $360,000. Does that sound fair to you?
Right.
Most buyers are not having those conversations with their realtors.
Well, and because the realtor oftentimes don't think about it that way either.
No.
I don't know why, because as an agent, I would like to make the contract for a higher price. I would like to make the contract for $400,000 instead of $360,000. However, in my buyer's best interest to have my, what's it called? Finance, fiduciary responsibility.
Fiduciary responsibility. What's that word?
To some terms.
Want to be responsible.
So you can rework it so that the payment ceiling that you said, hey, I can afford $3,000 a month, but that's going to have to include your principal, your interest, your home insurance, and your taxes. Mm-hmm. And make sure that all of that added up is your ceiling. And what you're saying is use the concessions or the credits. Do you use concession or credit? Which language?
I use the word credit, but I've seen it ambiguous in contracts and with no fault one way or the other.
Right.
Seller credit, seller concession.
But be specific when you write these things in the contract. You can say for prepaids, buy downs, and what are the other things that they put in there? If you're not sure, who are you going to ask? Your broker. Yeah, ask the Ghostbusters if you want to.
You had to. It's all the ring in my head.
They might know that. The answer. I don't know. But yeah, definitely look at a price point instead of now when you create searches as an agent. We usually make a search around a price point.
That's a good point.
Right? However, if you know you're going to be asking for concessions and credits anyway, go ahead and work some examples out. You know, get with your lender, get with your agent. Yep. Have a little strategy session around, hey, like, you were approved for this amount of money per month. But if we look at this house and offer it this way, we can actually get you into that house for the same payment.
Correct.
So let's go for this house that has everything that you need. 4 bedrooms, you know, 3 bathrooms, a pool in a gated community. Great, let's go take a look at it because this is going to fit what you need. But
interesting data, 95.5%, homes in Hillsborough County are selling at an average, in Hillsborough County only, are selling at an average of 95.5% of the list price. So the list price minus 4.5% is where the homes on average are selling. So obviously there's some selling at list price, there's some selling grossly below list price. But the average is 95.5%, meaning homes on average are being sold at a 4.5% reduction in original list price. So the point is, rather than playing the averages, right? Rather than doing price reduction, don't do a price reduction, do a seller credit, and then educate. You can include in your MLS comments, seller agrees to provide buyer seller credit to provide a below market interest rate. Like, say things that are gonna create a buzz, educate. If we can, as a community, educate the entire buyer pool who's on the fence that they can get a payment as though those homes are on sale, a yard sale even maybe. But think about that, a $400,000 sales price, giving the buyer $10,000, like the seller is gonna net way more than they would if they did price reduction. Correct. We're preserving the values in the community, we're preserving the realtor commissions. Not that that matters, right? But But we're preserving values and there's integrity to that because these homes don't have to be sold with the price reduction. And the funny thing with the price reductions is, you know, people, Melvin, you said, like, we were joking saying people like, oh, we're going to wait for the prices to come down.
Yeah.
Well, how much do you expect them to come down? Like, okay, exactly. Say they come down $30,000. Let's just say they came on $30,000 on a $400,000 home. That would be huge, by the way. That would be like
a massive
double-digit reduction, which we're hovering at like a 0 to like negative 0.8. You know, we're so far away from that reduction. Let's say there was a reduction that large. Mind you, everybody would be making offers on that home.
Yeah,
and now you're competing for the same home at the high amount. But $30,000 is about $160 a month. So you're kind of telling somebody, like, are you willing to hold out for half a year over saving $150, or can you just find the home that you want? Let's create this seller concession, get some incentives to lower our rate, you know, get the home that you want, or maybe just not get the exact home that you want. Instead of the 4-bedroom, maybe get the 3-bedroom with a nook and you can kind of do the bunk bed thing. But like, don't hold off on home ownership. as a result of not negotiating the right offer. So the offer is going to be the best price that you can pay for the home. I'm sorry, the best payment that you can pay for the home.
Right.
Not the best price for the home. People do price reductions, let's say from 500 to 490. It sounds good. It feels good. If I'm a consumer, oh, they counteroffered. I got my counteroffer. Well, it's $55 a month. So you can tell the buyer, just don't go to Chick-fil-A this month. and buy this house.
Pause Amazon for a month.
Pause Amazon. Yeah. Stop Netflix for 60 days and buy this home. So the premise around the affordability strategy is to focus on payment. Very, very high producing real estate agents focus on asking their buyers what their payment max is, not what their price max is. They don't have to get into a counter offer dispute or negotiations because you've already met their goal of the buyer, which is to meet that payment price payment point.
Well, and everybody's happy, right? Because we always try to do win-win. So when the seller is getting mostly the price that they asked for with some concessions, they're still selling the house. They're still keeping up with the property values in their neighborhood. You know, they're not selling it for $50,000 less than their neighbor, and their neighbor's going to get yelled like, hey, why you just messed up all my comps? Like, what the heck? Yeah. Like, you're kind of keeping the community going. You're making sure that your buyer is getting the best deal for their money and that they're getting what they want, which is what you ultimately need. So for just to wrap things up, because we are kind of at the edge of where we're at, we have
perfect timing.
A couple of books. Now, wait, before we get into the books, you have a workshop that you do.
I host an affordability strategist certification workshop every 6 weeks or so. So look out for invitations around that. Also, you can go to the Gaffney Mortgage Team on Facebook. The Gaffney Mortgage Team on Facebook.
I'll link
that. That's my business page. And I will, I do post invitations to the workshops, but it's a way for you to get absolutely dialed in on how to negotiate seller credits and what the benefit of those seller credits will be for your clients, so that you can be a better servant to your buyer's needs. So affordability strategist certification. It's not a NAR designation yet. I'm working on that, but right now it's just a Gaffney Mortgage Team designation. We'll give you an official certificate that you graduated from it, and we'll feed you a little bit too while you're there.
You just need to be this much better than the next guy, and this is one of those things that makes you this much better.
Again, going back to partnering with the right people.
Right.
Partner with the right people.
Exactly. Partner with the ones who are actually willing to teach you instead of just go, oh, I'll take care of it, and then you have no idea,
what's going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice to be educated and to be able to educate your clients.
I actually have a question for you later. I said, I'm going to need someone to explain this with crayons, because like...
I know. There's a lot of that lately.
It's like a very complicated loan question that has multiple moving pieces, and I'm like, I can't keep up with the last piece. So I was like, I'm going to need someone with crayons for sure.
We'll make sure for you.
I'll link everything in the show notes. You know, I'll probably get copies of these flyers and things like that, so you have something to reference. I'll make sure all of that is in there. All of Jim's contact information will be in there. If you have any questions, want to reach out, you know, want to give him a test drive on some mortgages, do it.
I highly recommend test driving for sure. Yeah, you will be impressed. Yeah. By his level of service, the care that he has for not only the agent, so yourself.
And it's consistent.
But the way he explains, whenever I have someone who doesn't know how to do something because like they've just never done it, I'm like, okay, I'm going to put you with Jim because he's going to actually explain this to you and not just go, oh, big fancy word here.
Don't worry, I got it.
There. Yeah.
I'll take care of it. I'll let you know when it's done.
He's so good. You're so good at that. Talking to you like you're not in the room. You're so good at this.
I appreciate that. I try to stay away from big fancy words, you know.
Yeah.
Went to a state school, so I mean, they don't flow that easy.
I know the big fancy words, and I use them when I have to.
That's
what Jim says.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, no, we appreciate you.
Great.
This is good stuff.
Yeah.
We'll put everything down there in the show notes for you. And join us next time for another episode of Rebrew. But for now, we're out. Brew good, do good.
Adios. Thank you. That's the last call for this round of Rebrew with Melvin and KJ and Milestone 2. From Tampa's breweries to deals done right, we'll catch you next time. Cheers and good night.